Enthusiasms. What are mine? What draws my admiration? What is that which gives me joy? Baseball! A man stands alone at the plate. This is a time for what? Individual achievement. There he stands alone, but in the field, what? Part of a team. Part of one big team. Bats himself to live long day. Babe Ruth to Ty Cobb and so on. If he don't field, what is he, Chris? No one. Sunny day, the stands full of fans. What does he have to say? I'm going out there for myself. But I get nowhere unless the team wins. That's right. And welcome to the Team I Breed Baseball. Here we are, a brand new podcast with a brand new partner who was a partner who did a show with me this week. What a story, right, Chris? Chris Dickerson, everybody from a lot of Major League Baseball teams. You all might know him. Well, we did a podcast this week for like 45 minutes in my kitchen. He brings over his French bulldog. What's his name? Gates?
Gatsby.
Come a little closer, buddy. Gatsby. So he's playing with Chancellor. I got an English bulldog. My cousin Gabe is watching them and all this stuff. And then they're going in and out of the house and doors are slamming. I got Shih Tzus. We're trying to do a podcast. Chris is pounding the computer freezes, right? At the 45 minutes.
No, it didn't freeze. Let's be honest here. You forgot to charge it. It died. And then we tried to turn it back on and recover the podcast, and that didn't work out so well. So, yeah. Now we don't have to worry about charging, but that was truly an amateur mistake.
It was, and we're going professional today. We're over at the Crespi Carmelites, Chris's rival school from Notre Dame High School in the Valley. How's it feel to be here as a Crespi Carmelite?
Like I told you, it's like you walking into Fenway.
It's that bad?
Yeah, it really is. It goes so far back. It's like one of those things where they inbred you to hate this school when you're a freshman, and then as things progress, you know, every sporting event that you go to, it's a new story. It's a new drama between the school, whether they're trying to steal your mascot or they're trying to burn down your athletic shed. Or we got spray painted. I mean, the story, they go on and on and on and on.
So it's not like a love-hate relationship. Like, I refer to the Red Sox, even though I can't stand them. It is like the cousin that you hate. And at times, I secretly at times pulled for them, like against the National League, because I'm not a... But I could never come out publicly and say that. But I mean, there is that kind of like... Even the Celtics, I rooted against them because I hated the Lakers growing up, and I can't stand the Celtics. But it's that cousin, you know what I mean?
It's blasphemy.
You must have a little love for the Celts, a little bit. Nowhere.
No, none. None, because that's one of the things that you're growing up as an LA kid in 87, 88. You know, you're 5 or 6. You're very easily influenced, and so you know
LA,
when you learn the hate, it's just like it sticks with you forever.
It's hardcore. Yeah, but were you a hardcore fan? Were you a hardcore fan growing up? I mean, you were
My dad was a hardcore Laker fan, back from work, on the couch, 7 o'clock. Back then it was prime ticket, Lakers games, Dodger
Showtime
games.
Showtime era?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, prime ticket back in the day before it switched to Fox. So yeah, we go way back. And my dad, you know, he's the guy jumping through.
The Forum was great, right?
Jumping through the roof.
Who, your dad?
Yeah, jumping through the roof. We'd be on Boy Scout trips.
Are you a Boy Scout?
Yeah.
Me too.
Well, Cub Scout. And then I was just like,
I'm a Cub Scout.
Over this. Yeah,
I went to the Cub. I was a Weeblo. And I went to the Boy. But I burned out. I was about to become a star. I was first class on my first star. Could have made life, but I mean, I don't know why. I wasn't a prototype, no, Boy Scout, but I mean, even camping. I mean, people are like, you camped, Nick? I was like, I know. I brought too many cans in my backpack and all that stuff. Let's get to baseball. That's what this is about. This is a baseball podcast, but we could talk about anything, but baseball is what it's really about. I mean, I fell in love with baseball in 1973. What about, is basketball your first love?
No, I think it was just, all sports.
All sports.
But, yeah, I mean, baseball, actually, to be honest, it was last on my list. I was a huge Dodger fan, don't get me wrong, because like I said, when I was, you know, Cub Scout trip, Gibson's Homer, my dad literally jumped through the roof, because my dad's 6'4", jumped through the roof. We were in a trailer eating peach cobbler on this trip.
What were you doing in a trailer?
It was part of the trip.
Oh, it was part of the trip.
We were out camping, like, way up in, you know, Elysium Park or whatever the campgrounds were. And so, yeah, he hit the homer, jumped through the roof. He was crazy. So Lakers, Dodgers, and then Rams at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I'm deeply embedded in it, but I, you know, late Dodger games for me, being outside, being, you know, right field bleachers.
That was like Yankee Stadium for you.
Oh, Dennis Martinez, no hitter, Darryl Strawberry, 3-home run game, Gary Sheffield, like all these great players that I try to emulate as a kid. And then, you know, being able to play there, like you said, it's, you know, playing in Yankee Stadium for me.
Yeah, unbelievable. Beautiful ballpark. Who was your favorite Dodger growing up? Did you have a couple of favorites?
Man, Darryl.
Strawberry?
Darryl Strawberry.
Wow.
Man, I had the haircut, wore number 44, you know.
Is that what he wore on the Dodgers, 44?
Yeah,
I think
so.
He didn't wear 18?
No, I don't think so.
And he's more known as a
44,
Met, you know?
And then Eric Davis came in, and I think he wore 40, or maybe it was flip-flop, but yeah, Darryl Strawberry, you know, left-handed, you know, right field. Left,
beautiful,
you know,
swing,
lefty,
right?
Lefty, yeah, tall, lanky. So that was my guy growing up. And then, you know, I progressed, and you had all the rookie of the years come in, Karros, Mondesi.
Piazza,
Todd Hollinsworth, all these guys.
Yeah, that was funny. That was some group, and they never got to really, you know, take it to the promised land. You know, Piazza made his bones in New York as a Met, and they were good teams, but they were never like, you know, they were never great teams for whatever reason. And they won in 88 with like a blue-collar team, but their pitching was insane that year with Hershiser, is that right?
Yeah.
What was it like?
But, I mean, that sounds like a lot of your boys' teams.
Yeah.
You put together these master teams and they can't get past, you know, NLDS.
I know. I mean, the Yankees never won with the superstar teams after 2003. They never won in the 80s with a lot of stars. And then when they put together like a blue-collar bunch in the 90s and all these players that came of age like Jeter and Posada and Andy Pettit, guys that all came up, they didn't have like a bona fide, you know, Barry Bonds. They didn't have those guys. They were really like a real team. They were a fun team, but they weren't like a bunch of stars.
Yeah, but that's the glory of having a minor league system, that you cultivate these incredible players and it just all happened to come fruition for an entire decade, you know, for them. And luckily they got four out of the same group all within a couple years of each other. So
I know, because you're lucky once in a while you might get one guy that produces and the rest of these guys are just, you know, they're prospects, but that's all they ever become.
Right.
They never, you know, they never materialized. Like they had Robinson Cano, but where's the next Robinson Cano? You know what I mean? Where's the next Jeter? Where's the next, you know, a lot of these guys just never live up. Why is that? Why? Just because it's so hard, you think? I mean,
I think it is. You know, I think Mo is a different case. He was a starter, and then he kind of just, you know, he just found his stride. But other guys are just, you know, they're just phenoms. Robbie was a phenom. Jeet was a phenom. You know, all these guys. But, you know, some guys are just, you know, they take it to that certain level, and then they kind of just flatten out, or they can't make the adjustments, or whatever the case is. But, you know, Mo is a different case. Like, he struggled as a starter, and they turn him in, and then the rest is history. So, you know, it's funny how it works, honestly.
Yeah, because you never can really tell, like, who would have known that Mariano Rivera was going to be, you know, Mariano Rivera. At the beginning, he was a failed starter. He was skinny. They were like, this kid, well, we got to do something with him.
Yeah, Pedro Martinez.
And the 70s, the Yankees.
1993 team set. Dodger Stadium, the terrible-looking, like, grocery store team set. And there was Pedro, 1993, skinny, like, all 170 pounds. Soaking wet with a jerry curl. And, you know, Dodgers couldn't figure out what to do with him. Went to Montreal. Boom. Rest is history.
I know. It's unbelievable. And his brother. I mean, his brother had
his
more.
His brother was great. Ramon was great.
He could throw, right?
He could deal.
Yeah, I've seen him live. He could definitely deal. I mean, Pedro was an animal out there, man. Nasty, too, boy. He got under my skin a lot of times, man. I was there one day.
Who's your daddy?
Oh, there. Who's your daddy, man?
Who's your daddy?
Who's your daddy?
Who's your daddy?
Oh, we owned him, man. We got in his head. I was there that night, 2003. And, you know, that's one of the great, the game seven, and the Yankees are up 5-2, one out to go, man. And Jeter starts it with a double over Trot Nixon's head. And then Bernie gets a hit. Matsui gets a hit. And then it was when Posada got the blue pit, man. I mean, because we thought it was, we really thought it was, I never felt, the place shook, man. It was incredible. It was a lot of great games, but that game, it was just like unbelievable. And then Aaron Boone, of all people, Aaron Boone, you know, and then he breaks his leg. And then the guy who I think breaks the curse, who I have a love affair with, is A-Rod. A-Rod is the guy. Even though I love A-Rod, I'm fascinated. I've told you I'm fascinated by him. It's my theory because listen to this, Chris. He was supposed to be a Red Sox. The Red Sox had a deal in place for A-Rod. I don't know if you realize this. They had a deal, and then Major League Baseball blocked it for some reason. I don't remember what the politics of it were. And then the Yankees came in. And, oh, they got A-Rod because we need a third baseman. He wasn't even a third baseman. But, of course, he had to concede to play third because he's not going to play short with Derek there. And it was weird. I said, there's just something weird about this. But you know what was the play?
They pulled the NBA veil over your head?
What do you mean?
It was just the weird, the conspiracy.
Oh, yeah.
Conspiracy.
I listen,
hey,
man.
It's just like, hey, just like when Chris, when the NBA blocked the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers. It's like, hey, come on. They don't want the team to be too stacked. Maybe they didn't want you to be too stacked.
I don't know.
You never
know. But they let the Yankees. Yankees have them. They let the Yankees. They wouldn't get the Red Sox.
Of course, because everybody loves the Yankees, just like everybody loves LeBron. So just, you know, the lightest little.
That's not true. A lot of people hate the Yankees.
You know, little brush to the groin. You know, they suspend Draymond because they want to go games. They want seven games.
People are happy. I mean, they definitely, they want to see a seventh game. It's funny, like Steph Curry, man, who's supposed to be like Mr. Cool through his mouthpiece and all that stuff. I'm like, that's a little, you know, you never saw Derek lose it. He's supposed to be somebody like, you know, he's supposed to be that cool guy. And his wife's over there tweeting about conspiracy.
There you go.
You got to be quiet when you're in that. I could say that.
Yeah, sounded like you last week. She was tweeting. I thought it was Nick tweeting.
Tell me about my tweets, Chris. You read my tweets?
No, I haven't. I haven't been on Twitter. Yeah. Yeah, in a while.
They come from the heart. I tweet as I feel, but like people are like, it's great, but your grammar, your English needs to be better. I'm like, well, that's why I'm trying to get my son to do it. So this way I can just get my feelings out and I don't sound like a, you know, a maniac, you know, but I'm just tweeting.
But you are a maniac.
I kind of am. Let's talk about you a little bit. The other day we touched on it. A late bloomer, right? Late in high school when you started playing baseball and then you said, wow, you didn't even realize you had the tools to go big time.
Yeah, no, well, I knew I had the tools. I knew I had the tools. It's just whether I really wanted to do that, you know, really commit to baseball. So my first love was soccer and football. And, you know, I didn't even play. I was on the freshman team, JV, barely squeaked that out. And then I just kind of hit a point where it just, things kind of clicked. It was probably my junior year, like American Legion, and the rest is history. But baseball was always something that I just did.
It just came easy to you?
Yeah. Really? Yeah, it did. Because especially playing defense, because defense was just like catching a football for me. So between that and staying up late and watching Griffey highlights and then going in the backyard and jumping up over walls trying to emulate robbing home runs and then, you know, playing dive and catch, you know, off the diving board, which every kid does. But it was just like one of those things that just came easy to me. I was a good athlete, but being a baseball player, I had to learn that over time. And so that one summer, that was it. And
when I say he's a baseball player, he's a good baseball player and not just a good athlete.
Yeah.
Knows
the game.
Right.
He's a great base runner, you know, knows the situation, you know, is clever on defense.
Smart,
you know, the
right?
guy, you know, if they're, you know, Jeter is baseball player, clever, you know, the Oakland,
right.
You know, the backhand flip as far as the awareness in the field, you know, who's up, what the count is, what the situation is. That's being a baseball player. When to bunt, when to hit and run, when to go, you know, counts that are favorable to steal. That's all becoming a baseball player. And that's all observation and a lot of teaching. And
there's a lot of intelligence in you know, playing the game the right way. Because there's some players that are talented, but they're dumb. They're dumb baseball players.
Puig?
I mean, I hate to say the word, but you watch them and you go, what is wrong with this guy?
Puig?
You know? I mean, Puig, come on. No one ever taught this guy.
I laugh.
He's hilarious.
I love watching him play. I love man, he's just...
He's exciting.
Yeah, just like a bat, you know, bat in a cage, just he's all over the place. So, and it's just, it's technical things too. So, you know, ball down the line, possible double. You know, it's a stand-up double, but, you know, he still bobbles it and he'll still come up throwing it 100 miles per hour, overthrow the cutoff man when there was actually, you know, there was just no reason for it.
Right.
So... It's stuff like that, but you know I admire him. He's really fun to watch, and
yeah,
you know, he's got the tools, and he's just like, hey, just watch me. Just
you think he's gonna put it all together and have one of these where he just really takes off, because it's crazy talent, but he hasn't for whatever reason really gelled, you know, over consistency of 6 months of one season. I mean, I think he could do it, but it hasn't happened yet. Do you think it's because he's just not disciplined, or he's stupid? You know,
he's not stupid.
No, I'm not saying stupid, but I mean, you know.
You know, I think it's one of those things where it's, yeah, discipline is one, and I think injuries have set him back too. Because I mean, that's a tough thing to do is to go in, you get hot, you know, blow out a hamstring, you're out 6 weeks, and then I come back, find that groove again, continue to have problems with it. So, you know, injuries are.
I
don't think people
understand
what it takes to get back to speed, especially at that level, to jump right back in and be successful and then take off wherever you left off.
But then you see that with a lot of guys. You go, and I see, we're coming from a fan's point of view, but not from a real player, like a guy, like, and that's easily like what cut you down short too. You said just with the injuries and to get back each time. But you wonder, like, why is this guy always hurt? Why is it? Is it bad luck, or is it just the luck of the draw? Or it's to get back. Is that what you're saying? It's so hard.
It's hard to get back. Yeah, I mean, 6 weeks. You know, whatever the injury is, arm, shoulder. You know, you're not throwing for. You know, pitchers who have arm problems, they're not throwing. They're shut down for like a month. That means you completely lose the feel of the ball. And then when you get back, whatever it is, you got to get the range of motion back. Then you got to adjust the feel of your hand. With a limited range of motion, you got to get that back, and then you got to get the velocity back in the field. I mean, it's really tough. Even as a position player coming back from shoulder
worse
surgery.
Worse for pitches, right?
Oh, 100%. I can only imagine when I did my rotator cuff last year.
Was that a bad surgery?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was miserable. I had done it in 06. I tore it when I was in AA, my right one. And I thank my lucky stars that it was not my left shoulder, because I don't think I would not have the arm strength that I would. It never came back the same. But pitchers, I mean, that is definitely a career threatening type of thing. To where if I came back now, I don't think I would have nearly the arm strength that I did before.
So you tore your right one when you were young?
And left. Yeah.
And now left of
2006 and then 2000 and then last year.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's tough, but so you know, look at, you know, even hamstrings is, you know, hamstrings when you're hitting, can't really put the weight on. There's so many different elements that go into it, and then getting that rhythm back and getting that swing back. So it's really tough, and you know, I can tell you from the best perspective possible, because I was always injured. I feel like that was my major league summary.
Just staying on a field really hurt you, huh?
Yeah, 100%.
And it wasn't because you didn't prepare. You weren't
in
shape, right?
No, it wasn't. And I look back at it. I look back at it. I'm like, you know, what was it? It wasn't like it was an oblique or a hamstring or anything like that. And I would always thought, well, I would have had problems with my knees because I had 4 surgeries before I even got to the big leagues. But, you know, it was my hand. You know, the hamate bone, that happens. It's a freak injury. It happens. Hockey, golf, baseball happens all the time. You know, shoulder, that was just laying out for a ball in Chicago and Wrigley trying to save the game, you know, sliding down the line. It's all, you know, it just all comes with the territory. And if I look back, you know, it was just, I would have done it all over again. I mean, it was simply just trying to put 100% effort into things and, you know, just didn't work out the way that you planned. So,
right. I mean,
that was part of my game, you know, that was part of my game is being, you know, kamikaze. So,
right. You went all out. You weren't a guy that like kind of did it like half speed, right?
No. Yeah. I wasn't afraid.
Right field, right? Was that you?
All of them.
All of them?
Yeah.
You played every position?
Every position.
What's your favorite?
Center.
Center, yeah.
Yeah, it's the easiest. It's the best view of the ball. It's the best view of the ball.
Yeah.
And, you know, you have seniority over everybody, you know, out there. So if you get on a ball, you call them off. Everybody obeys
right
your command.
Right field's tricky, right? I mean, just
the way... both the corners are. Left field's the worst.
It is the worst.
That's why they just take guys who can't play the field, and they throw them over there, and they just don't really expect much because balls dip, dive, they sail, and you know, you got the shortest throw. But yeah, right. Man, the corners are no joke.
No, that's no joke. I know. I always liked it, like Roy White when I was a kid. He had a good glove but no arm. It's like me. I had a good glove but no arm. I was a weird outfielder. My technique. People would say you look weird out there, but you catch the ball. I wasn't afraid, you know. And I would catch balls over my head. I'd keep running. I had a knack of it. But I used the first baseman's glove, and everybody was like, "It's illegal mitt. It's an illegal mitt." And I was like, "Come on, it's the Babe Ruth League. It wasn't that big." Bob Robertson, that was the guy's name. When I,
yeah, it wasn't illegal anyways.
Yeah, I mean, today they got big gloves. You know what I mean? They got big gloves today.
Yeah, that's like saying that when I played catcher left-handed and I use a first baseman's mitt that it was illegal.
Yeah, that's true.
I got no other choice. They don't make left-handed gloves.
No. I mean, come on, imagine a lefty catcher.
Left-handed gloves. Left-handed anything in this world is impossible to
it's
find.
It's weird, right?
I remember they had a store in San Diego called the Left-Handed Store. And it was like heaven.
Is that where you went?
Yeah, we would take these family vacations down to San Diego, and there was a shop in the wharf with all these bunch of different shops, and it was called the Left-Handed. Left-handed notebooks, so you wouldn't get ink smeared all over your hand writing across, or get the spiral edges. You left-handed scissors, it was great. It was the best thing ever.
Something about lefties is cool.
Yeah, you know? There's only 8% of us. We're rare. We're a very rare commodity.
And
you
they
know,
say they're creative
be,
people.
We should be cherished.
Are you a creative person?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, you actually seem like a smart guy. You don't seem like a thinker. You don't seem like a kind of guy. Were you a thinking kind of hitter? Did you analyze a lot? You weren't that just got up and sort of said.
So I wish I was that guy. I wish I was just the guy that just went up there, saw ball, hit ball. But at one point, you know, it's just like, yeah, overanalyze. You go up there, if you're not feeling great, just things start to compound. So,
yeah.
Man, I wish I was like a Manny where you just, you know.
Was he like an idiot savant?
You just go like, yeah.
He just was one of those freak of natures.
100%.
Did you love watching him hit?
Loved it. One of my favorite people to watch play.
Period.
Ever.
I'm with
period.
You. I'm with you.
Ever. Period.
He's hilarious. And talented.
His knack for just being so aloof to whatever is going on. Like,
was
I remember
he like just
seeing
that
him
relaxed,
wear
like
soccer
you could throw
cleats.
A bomb and he wouldn't.
Yeah. Like, you know, 0-2, you know, he would get to 0-2 just because he knew he was getting a slider and then, you know, hit, you know, go 385 right, you know, on a line.
He wanted
and,
the best
you know,
right-handed
and he's,
hitters,
you and think? He's running around with a smirk on his face, like I meant to do that. And then you know, with the fans and just how he plays the outfield.
Yeah,
he's so awesome.
I know
awesome.
He's awesome.
He's so awesome. And
did
then
you
when
get
you
to
watch
talk
him,
to him at all?
Yeah. Watching him take BP, talking behind the cage.
What would he say? Like, what would he give
well,
me?
Well, he had this split grip thing that he taught me, where he wanted a. It was a split grip. Kind of like Ty Cobb, where you'd have a 2-3 inch gap on the handle, and it was basically just to see if his top hand and his top hand and bottom hand were working correctly. So if he was popping balls up, then he knew his top hand wasn't working. If his bottom hand, so flip flop, so he could get a good feel. I thought that was so interesting, and I started using that. But to hear him talk, I mean, it's so awesome. He just has a different understanding, much like Miggy. Miggy's on another planet.
What,
too.
The way they look at things, like I mean,
yeah, their commitment to the plan, what they're trying to do that day, how they know what they're looking for. Miggy's on another planet too.
Just another
say,
level,
Poppy,
and it doesn't even matter if it's 0-2, 1-2 with those
does
guys.
Does not matter. Does not matter.
They're not nervous to hit with two strikes,
Poppy,
right?
I'm gonna go oppo today. I'm gonna go oppo home run, and sure enough, like he would just wait. He would take anything inside, and then he would get that one pitch out over the plate, and he hit an oppo home run. It was incredible.
What do you think the effect Manny had on Big Poppy? You think he had a big influence on Big Poppy?
Yeah, had to. Like, when you have a savant, like, on that team.
Because he's become a kind of a freak of Nate Poppy.
Amazing.
He's become this phenomenon. You know what I mean? I mean, like, in Minnesota, no one knew, you know, that he was this guy, and then he got together with Ramirez, and again, nobody can get this guy out. He's an animal, you know, and look at him now. Still, even though he says he's going to retire, the guy is. He looks like he could go on endless. He hasn't lost his bat speed. He's so smart. You know, sometimes you can throw the ball by him, but man, tremendous hitter, right?
Yeah, it's impressive.
I mean, they make it look easy, but it ain't easy.
No, it's not. You know? It's funny because he's just, yeah, I mean, he's just one of those guys. He's so good. He just has a reputation. So, like, I remember we were talking about walk-up songs, and Drake had just come out with a walk-up song. And there was only one dude in the league that could pull this walk-up song, and it was Big Poppy. And so everybody else, I remember Wayne Kirby, our first base coach, he was like, now, he's the only person who would have that song. And, you know, it was just other instances where, I mean, he hit a ball off Ivan Nova when he was a rookie, and he flipped the bat over and really couldn't even say anything. It's just like, I mean, hit this ball. He almost hit the subway, I swear.
Wow.
And it's just like, you know, he just does what he does, and you really can't say anything. Just he repeats greatness, and he's just been consistent.
Mm-hmm.
And he just has this, like, moxie about him. That right. I can never hate on. Yeah, his presence, and he's just like a big bear. So he's one of my favorite players.
He is. I mean, you know, and he comes across, you know, believable. You know, somehow you, even though whatever the whispers, maybe he was on a juice list or this or that, but he comes across pretty legit. I mean, he doesn't come across like a fake person. He definitely comes across real. I don't know that much about Cabrera, but he seems like to be a freak of a hitter, too. I mean, you saw it in Florida when he was there. It was like, this guy can flat-out hit. He's just one of those guys that's you know, can hit to all fields. He's so relaxed. And I saw him in the All-Star game in Minnesota. And I was like, wow. When you see him in person, you get a different perspective. TV is always weird, you know?
He's huge.
And the ball explodes off his bat.
It's a different sound.
Yeah, it is a different sound. It is
a different sound.
A different animal, right?
Man, it's crazy. I remember, playoffs 2011 when we opened up in Detroit. He was taking BP and he was talking shit to Swisher. And he just said, hey, Poppy, you can't do this. You ain't got this. You ain't got this. And he was going oppo up over the ivy in center field. Mind you, it's 440.
Mm-hmm.
Or it's four, I forget what the dimension to dead center is, and he's going up on top of the
ivy. Jeter, I heard his name, was that 2012?
No, that was 2000, that was the next year.
Yeah, next year.
Baltimore.
Yeah, we never did a good game against Detroit. Hey, man, they aggravated me in the playoffs. I don't know why, they had our number, we couldn't.
Yeah, Baltimore, yeah, because I don't know if it was that. I think he was just, you know, Jeep being Jeep, just trying to play through. I think he had a stress fracture from the ball. He fouled off his foot.
So even though you're a professional, you know, when you see guys like that, like Miggy, like Manny, I mean, you're kind of in awe, right? Other
100%.
Yeah, other. Every time I see him, and you're in awe.
Every time I see him, it's one of those things where you want to be present. If you're not playing that day and you just happen to be, you know, going to get some water in the batting cage and he's hitting, you're going to come out and watch his at bat.
Right. Yeah. 100%. You just don't want to miss him, right?
Don't want to miss it. Don't want to miss it. And my favorite memory, probably one of my best memories ever, was Manny in Dodger Stadium. And the night before, Homer Bailey had hit him in the hand. He came out of the game. And next night was Manny bobblehead night on a Friday night. And they were expecting 58,000 fans. And it didn't play. Manny didn't play. And there was bases loaded in the fifth inning. And I didn't know what was going on. I looked up. They were showing Manny. I'm like, oh, man, here we go. And they see Manny go down the tunnel. And everybody, and it was just, I cannot believe. And just especially being in Dodger Stadium.
Right.
And he goes down the tunnel, you know, goes and, you know, takes his swings. And he comes back. And they show Manny again, you know, putting on his helmet, and then they show the Manny bobblehead, and then they had like the Manny bobblehead shaking, and Manny steps out on deck, and the place erupts, and we had Nick Massett on the mound, which was one of the filthier relief guys that we've had or that I've seen. You know, fortunately, he's you know, he had arm problems, but he was flat out filthy, and so Manny came out. People are on their feet, 56,000 fans, and Manny comes out, hasn't played, took a couple swings in the cage, and first pitch, 96, grand slam.
Smoked it.
Pulled it right field? Right field into Manny Wood. And I remember taking off my glove, turning around to the people in the right field bleachers and smiling and be like, I can't believe it. That's unbelievable.
Yeah.
And it was just like, you know, I just kind of felt like I was just kind of talking to my neighbors. It was like, you know, these people like live down the street from me probably. So it was like, I got it. this is crazy.
Does it feel real?
Crazy.
Like sometimes you must say, like, wow, is this really happening?
Crazy to be, to be in a game, Dodger Stadium, with that type of atmosphere. And then Vince Scully said on the broadcast, he was like, I haven't heard it this loud since the Gibson home run. He was like, it's been a long time since
and
I've heard it this loud.
And you hear it, right, when you're on the field? I mean,
it's
some people say that it's like they block it out. I don't understand.
Nah, it's deafening.
Is it intimidating? Or does it feel like out of body a little bit? Like I don't know, everybody's a human, but
I think you do block it out.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I haven't been in too many, you know, on defense, it's one of those things where you just got to get locked in with the communication, be like, hey, let's go, let's focus up. We know what the plan is. We know what we got to do, but we got to talk. So, you know, be as loud as possible. When you step in the box, it's just you and the pitcher.
You and
that's
the guy.
It.
Right.
And that's it. Like, you got to do everything to get your emotions under control. And you got to just be so diligent in what exactly you're up there to do.
Mm-hmm.
And because I remember when the walk-off in Baltimore, that was.
You hit a walk-off?
That was crazy. Yeah.
Yeah, against who?
That was crazy.
You remember?
Oh, my God.
That's all right.
Not even Blake.
Don't worry about it. I don't remember a lot of stuff either. A lot of people go, do you remember this? You remember that? And I'm like, I remember very little. I remember my childhood. You know, it's like, it's funny, your adult life. My brother told me this. He goes, you don't remember it. You've been married. You've had children, kids, this, that. I was like, I remember very little. I remember glimpses. It's like, I don't know if I just blocked it out or if I'm just nuts in the head. It's weird, but you don't remember a lot of your life. You find out, like now I'm 50-something, so I'm trying to remember things. I'm trying to remember, how did I feel when I did NYPD Blue? Or how did I? And I remember that feeling, but I'm like, wow, I did live. I am here 50-something, but I can't remember squat. It's hard. Like, you can't remember. You played in the major leagues, and you can't remember hitting the walk-off. I mean, how could you forget that? How could you forget the walk-off?
I'm trying to figure that out right now, actually.
It's amazing.
It's a little bit of it's disconcerting to myself.
Yards?
It was at Camden. It was against Detroit. I just can't think of the closer's name. He had the glasses.
Oh, you had the glasses.
Oh, my God.
Oh,
this
God.
Is terrible.
Man.
See? Old age.
You got me thinking
old
now.
Age.
You had the
this
glasses.
Is this is what happens. It's all downhill from here. The gray hair starts
going.
Yeah, every gray hair that comes in is a memory loss. And
remember
I
your
just
first
feel...
at bat, you told me your legs were shaking,
oh,
right?
Oh, yeah. That was insane.
2008? Yeah. And you struck out, right?
No, I walked on four pitches.
Oh, yeah. You were like, thank God I walked, right?
Thank God. Yeah.
Yeah.
Walked on four pitches. Yeah, I got to first base, and I was just like, all right, I gotta figure something out to get rid of these nerves.
Yeah. Unbelievable. Right?
Yeah.
But the walk-off must have been great, right?
Oh, unbelievable. I mean, Friday night in Camden.
Friday night?
Man.
They pick you up.
Jose Valverde.
Oh, Valverde.
Yeah, your favorite.
Yeah, my favorite. I know. He owned the Yankees.
Yeah.
I hated that guy.
You're your favorite.
God, Valverde.
Yeah,
what'd they call him? He had a nickname. I don't know. They all have some kind of nickname. I can't look at me now. I'm forgetting nicknames. I'm good with numbers. Like if you throw a number out, like the other day, some kid, Stromsborg, you know, the guy you know,
yeah.
I know, his son was wearing 75. I said, you know who wore that? The kid didn't even know Barry Zito wore. He was like, I don't know. I know not many baseball players wore 75. I said, you need to know that. You need to know that Barry Zito. And his father was laughing. I'm a numbers guy. I like numbers. I mean, I used to be good with initials, but I don't know. My memory now is, you know, years ago, you give me an initial. I probably could remember, like, if it was the 70s or something like that. But lately, it's just so many people. I can't, I don't know. My memory is gone. So you played, tell the audience, was it six teams or seven? Seven.
Six. It can't be seven. It can't possibly
can't
be
seven.
Seven.
Can't be seven. Can't be seven. There's guys
seven.
That played on more teams than you. Listen, even in major leagues, that's tremendous.
Octavio Dotel.
Octavio
Dotel.
Yeah,
I think he's the only one who's got more.
Oh, really?
I think Jerry Harrison's up there, too.
Jerry Harrison's up. He's a cool guy.
Jerry's
up there.
Jerry's great.
Jerry's a great guy. And one time we were shooting this thing on the field. My son, we're at Yankee Stadium, he wanted to go in the dugout. And they told the kids, they can't go in the dugout. And Jerry said, who said that? He goes, come on in the dugout. I don't care what they say. It was like crazy. Yeah, the new Yankee Stadium had all these rules. I was outside with Phil Koch, telling Phil Koch that I was screaming at him, watching a game, and I was yelling at him because we were shooting outside. I'm really pissed at you. I said, but I owe you an apology. He goes, you're pissed. You're pissed. How do you think I feel? I said, because he gave up the home run to Victor Martinez. We were shooting a... this thing I breed baseball was all about my fanaticism, me watching a Yankee game, and they're all asking me, well, when are you going to yell? I said, listen, I got to have a reason to yell. I just can't yell for no reason. Then Girardi brought in Phil Koch, and I was really aggravated. I said, well, you know, you don't bring in Phil Koch in a game like this. But then me and Phil Koch became friends, you know, so we had a pitch.
Yeah, Phil took it personal. Phil's a great dude, but he took it personal when he came in, when he was in Detroit, and he shut down. He made it known.
Oh, yeah. He was a little angry towards the Yankees.
He made it known. We were in Detroit. He came and shut out.
I think some stuff happened between them. I don't really, you know, who knows what goes on behind. It's like anything. It's like you know when you take it personal. Somebody you feel like, you know, slighted you or they did you wrong. I mean, I felt like that times where people go, you know, they don't want to give you your due and you know, and you go, this is personal. You know, it maybe not be personal.
Yeah,
but it feels that way.
Yeah,
if somebody doesn't like you, they might say, hey, I don't like him. For some reason, I don't like his face. I don't like Nick or I don't like Chris. And you're like, I know this guy had it in for me. I know he's the one that ousted me. So, you know, you do take it personal. You're a person. You're not a robot, right? I'm sure you have felt that way sometimes. Maybe you felt like, you know, for whatever reason, this guy just doesn't dig me, or he's not giving me a chance. But you played for a lot of great managers, you were telling me.
Yeah.
And you said Buck was
man.
Great. You
Dusty,
loved Buck.
Dusty Buck. Buck was unbelievable.
Showalter.
Man, yeah. Buck was unbelievable. Dusty was incredible. Joe,
you didn't like Girardi.
Joe, I know you're not a fan, but Joe's one of my favorites all time.
I give Joe a hard time. He's Italian, but I give him a hard time.
Yeah, he's in a tough position. You know?
I know.
You know, being the skipper of the world's greatest sports franchise, it's tough.
I expect a lot.
Position.
You know, I'm one of those fans that, you know, I just, you know, I'm not saying I could manage. Like I said, I'd be a good bench coach.
Yeah, a consigliere.
I'd be a consigliere. I'd be a good Don Zimmer.
Right,
they need a guy
right
like me.
Man.
They need a guy like me. How'd you like to hear me doing a play-by-play? Don't you think that'd be great, Chris?
That would be amazing. Except you wouldn't get tossed down to the ground by your head by Pedro, I don't feel like.
No.
I think you'd probably get a little couple shots in.
No, I get a few shots.
I think, because you're small. I think you're probably nimble and quick.
Yeah, but I'm strong. Don't watch out. Don't underestimate the size. I hit hard. That's what I taught my son. My son's become a good boxer. I hit him with a right hand.
Yeah, that's right. You box because we were talking about that before we went on. He was like the Brucey character.
Yeah,
Bruce,
well,
yeah,
because I always
three
I shadow box
and a half.
Yeah, that's better.
That's right.
He's still tired. Then you got up and you're throwing, lefts and rights and hooks. And
I look good. I'm a good fake fighter. You know, well, he's gotten really good in the ring. But you know, I think the first sparring session, he's trying to everybody's like, this is a father and son, and he's like trying to take me out. And I hit him with a right hand, and I caught him on the side, and he had to take a knee. I said, see? After that, he beat the hell out of me. But I said, you got to respect the old man, because I'm good for only about 3 minutes. I'm quick. I'm in and out. I don't last long. That's me, man. And even as a lover, I'm short.
That's crossover to other places?
I know. It crosses. Well, you know, I use baseball in a lot of ways, with life, with boxing, with, you know. I hit a home run, man. That's what I am. I swing for the fences. I don't fool around. Even this. I come in, I leave it all right here in the room, Chris. We don't fool around over here. You know what I mean? If I make my sauce, I make the sauce authentic. I eat the pizza, it's got to be the right slice of pizza. I mean, you know, I don't like guys that play half. You know, you give me all, you give me your all, and then that's fine. If we lose, we lose. I'll be a gentleman. So we had the Reds, the Yankees, we had the Orioles, we have the
Pirates organization that got traded to Cleveland.
And Cleveland.
And Toronto.
And Toronto. Yeah, not Tampa Bay, right?
No.
I saw some throwbacks today at Tampa Bay. I haven't seen those uniforms too much. They have these old throwbacks, they break out.
Throwbacks?
Yeah, Tampa Bay has this uniform.
1998?
I know, they have
That's
like
not
this.
A throwback.
Yeah, well, they throwback for them.
Which is awful. It's the devil ray with the black and the purple.
No. Yeah, but this was blue or something. I got to show you a picture of this uniform. I don't know where it came from, but...
It's baby blue?
TB, like a baby blue. It's not
bad.
Did
it have like the star on the chest?
Maybe.
Yeah, I think those were just new. I think there's, you know, that's the new cool thing right now.
I heard Johnny...
Just the jersey that you're wearing right now.
Yeah,
those
you
are
like
the cool
this one?
Thing. Yeah, those are unbelievable.
This is great, right?
Yeah, throwback night. Those were my favorite ones. Because we wore those in Cincinnati 1 year, the 70s jerseys. And then I think a couple years ago, we were in Kansas City. We had throwback night. We wore the old Indians ones. We were straight out of
those are nice.
Major League.
Right out of Major League.
Major League 1, yeah.
Yeah.
Felt like Willie Mays Hayes that night.
Oh, man. That's a funny movie.
Great.
That's a funny movie.
It's classic.
You know what's a good baseball movie? You ever see Bang the Drum Slowly?
No.
Yeah, it's an old movie that De Niro plays a Southern catcher who gets, like, this disease, him and Michael Moriarty, and he's like a backup catcher. And it's a very good movie. A lot of people don't know about Bang. Well, some people do. It's a great baseball movie. I mean, you know, there's a few that I love. The Natural. Of course, I love The Natural.
Naturally.
I mean, you know, I wish there was more good baseball movies. I want
to
make
they
a
need to come up. They do. And I think about it a lot. I think about writing a baseball movie, but more importantly, how I would project, like, the characters who would be of like pro quality, because you get these actors and they can't throw.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
At least I could
painful
play.
To,
yeah,
it's
I know.
So
you could tell.
To watch.
Like De Niro could not
painful
hit a baseball.
To, yeah. Painful to watch. And tip my hat to Kevin Costner. He plays baseball. Yeah, he plays baseball. He just looks legit.
Yeah.
Charlie Sheen looked legit.
He looked pretty
Wesley
good.
Wesley Snipes was a great athlete from what I understand. He didn't play any sports. He's just an incredible athlete. But
you
when you look at like Freddie
Prinze. How about The Fan?
Oh, yeah.
That's crazy.
That's terrible.
Now do you care?
Yeah, now do you care? He's like, I don't know.
Like Bobby.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Oh, you know,
he's
when he says, his name, Bobby.
Yeah.
Bobby. I get you.
He's
listening.
Like, I don't know. Well, you know, so, you know, how do you... You know, what's the key to success? He's like, I don't know. You know, I just stopped caring.
Right. He
now
and that,
do you
that,
care?
That aggravated him. That really aggravated him. He said, you stopped caring?
He was a nutcase.
Yeah, he was a nutcase, man. It's not a great movie, but a great character study. I mean, De Niro really, like, he takes it to such a level. You know?
Yeah,
I
man,
mean,
there's
he makes
people
it,
out there.
I know. There's lunatics. I've been watching this OJ thing. I can't get enough of it.
It's insane. It really is.
I don't want to go off
the... It is crazy. Now that I'm older...
And I followed
now,
the whole case.
Now, looking back, because I was young. I was 12 or 13. It was 1994, and I remember we were coming back from a...
That's right.
We were coming back from a camping trip. We do a summer camping trip every year, a class camping trip down in San Diego. And we were coming back the day he was on the 405. He was 20 miles ahead of us. And we were on the... You know, the teachers were on the radio, basically, like, listening to this play-by-play. And we're, you know, trailing this whole thing. It was insane.
Right.
And then the next year being, you know, it's, you know, just crazy, you know, with the riots and then being, you know, sitting in there like a predominantly white classroom looking at watching the verdict. It was just a very weird time. But to look back and gain some perspective now as an older man now, it was just so wild. And just the manipulative stuff that was going on,
Yeah.
It's crazy.
It is
but
crazy.
Yeah, the 30 for 30s, man, they're all unbelievable. There's not a 30 for 30 that I don't like.
They're great. I'd actually like to do one myself. I really would. I have one guy who played in the 60s and the 70s. I mean, if they'd go for this guy, because he's still living and breathing. He was called like the Joe Namath of that era. But this is great. I mean, this is like, because you think you know everything about it, but yet you're still finding out. And just to reflect on how... This thing never gets old, and there's a lot of stuff. I saw footage last night that I never saw, and terrible footage, and just mind-blowing to see, like, this guy that when he went from where he went to the bottom, and then the mockery they made out of the trial, and how they made it really, like, you know, a race thing when it wasn't, and O.J. being more black than the reality was. O.J. really didn't even celebrate his African-American... You know, really, he really was more of inbred with white people, you
right.
know, so it's just unbelievable. And then the brutality of what happened, you know, you forget that the two people were, you know, viciously, not just murdered. I mean, viciously, nobody deserves to go like that. And just like, you know, how you could be blind to it. You know, 99.9, you know the man was guilty. He almost confessed basically in front of the world, you know, with that whole chase and everything. So I remember the Knicks were in the finals that year, and I'm like, I'm getting interrupted.
The other 30 for 30.
You know,
it was I forgot what it was. It was like
that trial.
It was like June
more,
12th, June 12th, 1994,
crazy,
or whatever. It was just I think
crazy.
It was just called June.
I was living
12th.
In Sherman Oaks.
And so at the time, so the OJ, the finals, and then something else was going
a lot
on.
Of stuff.
And all three of them, there were these three unbelievable sporting events that were going on all simultaneously.
Right.
So they were completely overshadowed by what was going on
by the chase. Yeah, I mean, and it was, that was more than just that was more like about LA too. that trial. That was a, it was about, they made it about, instead of it being a murder trial, it became this spectacle. You know, anyway, we get enough with OJ. I'll watch part five and I keep talking. I don't want to keep talking about that stuff. But well, how do you feel about this year going so far? You excited about, you know, baseball, the state of baseball? Do you feel it's a little mediocre? Do you feel like it's even? It just seems like there's not like a lot of dominant teams out. There's a lot of parity.
Except for the Cubs.
Yeah.
Except for the Cubs, but I think that's my main storyline right now.
Right.
I don't want to jinx them. But right. I mean,
it's coming.
It's. I just hate to say it. Hopefully, the Billy Goat don't come out. They're so fun to watch, and it's just fun to watch them put the pieces together. Being in the Central and them being so bad for those couple years, and then, you know, hats off again to their scouting department for getting the guys that they did, and their guys have just been absolute studs, but. And then Joe Maddon, the absolute perfect guy. He is the young player guru. And I know you have a man crush on him because you want him to take over. You want to hang out with him. You want him to take over in New York.
Yeah.
But being in the East when, you know, he had those young Tampa teams, it was, dude, he's the young guy whisperer.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I mean, they've got it going, but the poor Cubs fans.
But it's going to happen. It's going to happen. I mean, sooner or later, that Billy Goat's going to be put to sleep and Bartman and all these things. I mean, so I'm not saying anything, but it's coming. I mean, listen, the Red Sox got over the hump, but, you know, they deserve it. My God, what a stadium. What a sports town, Chicago.
Oh,
I mean, Wrigley Field. What is it like playing in Wrigley Field? Is that the best day batting practice sessions ever? Great, right?
Ever. 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock in the afternoon. You know, yeah, noon. You know, game's 1:05. You can be out there at noon taking last couple rounds of BP, and the stands and bleachers are completely packed. Everybody's wasted already.
Wow.
Ready to go. And just the stuff that comes out of their mouth is crazy.
It's a Cubs town.
It's insane.
I know. I mean, listen, they're good sports fans, but.
My mom hates him. My mom lived in Chicago. That was a cool thing. My mom took a new job when I got called up to Cincinnati, and she drove down from Chicago. And then she got to see me play all the time because I was in the Central. And so the stories that she would tell me about these fans.
What they say?
Oh, my God. Well, I remember Adam Rosales got called up one year, and he had just got called up. Adam is from Chicago. And Adam was pinch hitting, and his parents were standing up cheering him on. And these people just lit into it, like, sit down, nobody cares. Like, nobody cares, lady, sit down, you're blocking my view. Like, nobody cares about your son, sit down. Like, oh, my God. Like, yeah, dude, well. The kid is from Chicago. And she turned around. She's like, he's from Chicago.
Well, the things you encounter in a ballpark.
Man, it's just like class goes out the window.
Oh, it's gone. It's gone.
It's a weird transformation that people turn into that I don't understand. You can tell right away
when someone is a good fan, even if they're passionate, and you strike up a good conversation, you say, this guy is legit. He knows the game. He's a good fan. And then you can tell the wannabes, the real idiots, I say.
The bleachers.
I'm talking about the moronic fans out there.
Out there in the bleachers.
That really don't, they're just there to cause trouble, cause havoc, or people that do violent. It's stupid.
Yeah.
You know, it's really not like, it's not intelligent. You know, yeah, you want to have if you have an argument, let's have a good argument. You want to have a debate?
Unless you're in right field with the.
But you got to be careful.
With Ballhead Vinny out there.
Ballhead Vinny's all right.
One of my favorites. Always.
You got to be careful in Fenway, too. Listen, I've been there.
Oh, yeah.
And they're harsh, man. Yeah. They're harsh.
They come out there with.
That whole Massachusetts thing that anger.
Dickerson, what are you reaching in your back pocket for?
Yeah, get in that pocket.
What's in your back pocket?
Right.
Get out of here. Quit scratching your ass. What's in your pocket?
Anger.
Get your ass out of your pocket. What happened? You go out, have too many beers, lost your car, and have a yard.
Yeah, I have a yard.
How do you lose your
party people?
Yeah. Oh, man.
Oh, it's so bad. But I love it.
I love it. Every time I went back to Yankee Stadium, they were always super cool.
You ever go in that ball, Caskin Flagon, behind the Fenway? I've been in there with a Yankee jacket. It's right behind Fenway.
Yeah. I get in and I get out.
I did a thing there, and I was like, I better get out of here. People were like, don't bother him.
Yeah, it gets nasty. I mean, you know, like you said last week, it was like you got to have some nerve to come into the into Shark Tank.
You do.
Like meat hanging off.
You just
got to
come
in.
You got
to come in the right field bleachers wearing Boston stuff. It's like you're pretty much asking for it. You're asking to get taken out.
Listen,
in the third inning.
I mean, I saw fights in the 70s, beer going. It was even rougher. But the Yankees Red Sox, one of the greatest. There's a lot of real anger there. There's a lot of real, because it goes back a long time. But today it's not quite as angry. Today you get some stupid, you know, violent things. But back then they had real fights, like fist fights. But, it's a great sports town. I mean, but you got to just know where to draw the line. And when you go into enemy territory, you got to be careful. I always say, be careful.
Tread lightly.
I've always, I've come across, I've been lucky. I might yell and somebody touched me one time in Seattle. He goes, I had about enough of you. And I said, don't touch me. Don't you dare touch me. I said, because I said, I wasn't offending. I was just cheering my Yankees on. I think it was 2000. I think they had A-Rod then, the Mariners. And I was just, I was like, yeah. And I was getting really, I was right into it. But I wasn't like offending anybody. I could cheer. And then people are like, sit down, you New Yorker. Sit down, you.
Going into fanatic mode.
I'm working. I'm working the game. I'm intelligently watching the game pitch by pitch. I sit there for 3.5,
fanatic,
4 hours. I'm a fanatic mode.
Like the guys in For the Love of the Game.
That's right.
Hey, Chapel. All right, Billy. That's
right.
That's you.
That's me. I mean, I am hardcore. And this is hardcore.
Or you're the guy at the bar, too. He's like, I can name a Yankee for every number. He's like, number two, Billy. Number three, Babe Ruth. Four, DiMaggio. Five, DiMaggio. No. Six,
yeah. Joe Torre. Seven, Mantle. Eight, Yogi. Nine, I'll say Greg Nettles, but some people might say Roger Maris.
Rizzuto.
10, Rizzuto. To me, Chris Chambliss. 11, not too many great 11s. Chuck Knobloch. 12, who's 12? Wade Boggs, not even a true Yankee. 13, A-Rod. 14, we'll say Sweet Lou Piniella. 15, my hero, my idol, Thurman Munson. 16, Whitey Ford. 17, for me, Mickey Rivers or Oscar Gamble, the big O. 18, not nobody great. Oh, maybe Brocious at 18. 19, Dave Rags Righetti. I could go on and on, man.
20%.
They took all the problem with the Yankees. They retired numbers.
That's what happened.
They should have only retired the iconic players. Now you got no numbers left. So, everybody's retired. It's too much.
Getting a number there was impossible. That's why I had 27.
You
felt like that was
good.
the designated number for whoever came up or free agent guy.
It's a good outfielder's number.
Yeah, it was great. I loved it until Raul took it from me the next year.
Yeah.
But then when I came back, I had to get 60 because if you look on the team sheet, because I had 39 in spring training, I need another number. I was like, well, and they have this list.
30, you had 39?
They have this list, and 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, all retired, and then 11, 12, 13, taken, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, and then Posada wasn't playing anymore, but you weren't allowed to wear it, and then 21, 22, 23, all retired, 24 is Robbie, 25, 26, Joe had it, and then you got all these numbers, just blank, and then the guys, Bernie,
51.
Bernie, Pettit, all these guys. Oh,
Tino.
You cannot. Still couldn't wear it. Couldn't
wear
it.
People are wearing Tinos now. People are wearing 24. No one's worn O'Neal.
Oh, 21. 21's off.
Yeah, that's
21's off limits.
The Warrior. They're not going to give Paulie O'Neal.
I am the Warrior.
I love O'Neal. I love him. A Cincinnati Red, man.
Yeah.
Ohio boy.
Yes.
Yeah. Do you have a sweet spot as your first team?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, you do, right?
Yeah, definitely. Special place in my heart for Cincinnati. So,
you played at Riverfront? Did you play at Riverfront?
No.
No, just at the Great American.
I'm not 40.
That's right. You're not that old. You're not that old. You're
no,
young
yeah. 2003, they built that.
Got a nice ballpark.
Great,
you
American
like?
Ballpark.
Great American ballpark.
Yeah, it was all right. Until you get on the visitor side.
Oh, really? Why?
Yeah, I think they just ran out of money and just threw some in there.
Really?
Like, yeah, chicken wire locker.
It's a little cheaply done.
Perfect square.
Is that what you're saying?
The kitchen has an arc or an arc to it. So if you go get snacks in the back, you got to like duck down. Yeah,
really?
Yeah.
So it chintzed a little bit.
Yeah. So yeah, one of the shystier visiting clubhouses in baseball. Yeah, for sure.
Maybe some gangsters behind it.
Yeah.
Ran out of money.
Yeah, but yeah, Cincinnati for sure, because it was, you know, it was it
looks cozy,
all of us coming up together since, you know, 2004, 2005 is the same, you know, same guys. And you guys all get to the big leagues together. You know, you're there for 3-4 years. It's
good park to hit in, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. What do you think about the American League? I mean, you think they get their ballparks are a little, some of them are really, really small, really not. I mean, it's more hitter friendly than the National League. National League parks seem a little more. Do you think that's overrated? As far as like somebody's, I mean,
you know,
I don't know.
Yankee Stadium neutralizes itself in left field with the 390.
It does.
Deep gaps.
Even though right field's a joke.
Yeah, right field's a joke, but everything else it neutralizes. You 395 to the gaps.
Yeah.
Tampa's a.
It's bigger than people think.
It's bigger than people think.
I know.
It's bigger than people think.
It's not the Kingdome.
Kansas City is huge.
That's big, huh?
Yeah, Cleveland's a good place to hit. I'm trying to think of big ballparks that kind of. Oh, Seattle.
Yeah, that's a big yard, right? That's a big yard.
It's a big park, man. It's BP. It'll make you feel small.
How about Detroit? Detroit, they move the defenses in a lot. They've moved it in, right? Yeah.
Yeah, they did.
Even Comiskey seems like now people are hitting a lot of bombs out of Comiskey. The new Comiskey. I went to one game there.
Cellular Field?
So, whatever they call it. You know, it's
yeah, whatever corporate entity.
I don't know what corporate. It's not a bad place in person. On TV, it's kind of, it looks pretty vanilla.
Yeah, because nobody's in the stands.
Yeah, well, it's in the middle of nowhere.
It's not really in the middle of nowhere. I mean, you just go out downtown, 20 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, you're there.
I found it. I thought it was like in a ditch somewhere.
South side. No, but it's not like Kansas City.
Kansas City's
in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
Legit.
No,
I know.
I know. I went there. I went there with a U-Haul and a truck before they refurbished it. I caught a foul ball. 2001 after 9/11. I was driving. I was stopping at all different ballparks. I actually got a foul ball. A guy was drunk and I just grabbed it. It's nice. Nothing like catching a foul ball. I love it.
Yeah. Legit. It just dropped it in a. Well, I mean, so is Dodger Stadium.
Yeah, no, Dodger Stadium.
It's like,
legit.
Oh, okay, cool. There's
that's no joke.
Know, yeah, it looks like a great area. It's in on a mountain range, which is dropping.
I know,
right
but there's a lot
ravine.
Of areas around it that are like coming up. People are telling me.
Yeah, man.
All these hipster neighborhoods.
Yeah, man. It really is, man. It's
hipster,
no joke.
I'm hearing about these neighborhoods.
I did 32 miles on my bike last week, and we went around Elysian Park. Yeah. So we went all around the stadium and all up and through those hills. And man, there's some really nice houses.
You like it?
It's really starting to. There's some. It's a great looking neighborhood. It's really cool.
Would
it's
you
really on the up
there?
And up. Yeah, 100%. There were some houses where right by the park. Hiking trails, there's a lake, there's a pond down there, people running, walking their dogs.
And this is near Elysian.
And I looked at my buddy, and my buddy's lived downtown for like 3 or 4 years. He's from Detroit originally. We looked at each other like, is this for real up here?
Right.
Like, and I felt embarrassed. It was so nice, I felt embarrassed for myself. I'm like, I'm born and raised here. I don't ride my bike over here a whole lot, you know, cause unless you're really trying to kill yourself with the hills.
How many miles you ride? 32?
We did 32 that day.
Oh, so you're a cyclist?
Yeah, from downtown. Yeah, Saturdays and Sundays. Saturday and Sunday
mornings.
That's what
I need to do. Get on the bike. Maybe I'll lose this stomach.
Yeah, man, it's no joke. You get in shape really quick, man. But yeah, I saw a couple houses. I was like, sign me up.
Beautiful.
Sign me up. But yeah, hipster neighborhoods. Great
food.
These
hipsters
have taken over. Great restaurants over there.
I know.
You know. So,
listen,
you
got the skinny pants. You could fit right in, man.
Yeah, all you need is some suspenders and a mustache. And an ultra, like a portable record player.
We covered it all. What a show. Baseball, OJ, the hipsters, boxing, put everything into one. But listen, we're going to have some surprises coming for you, and we're going to have some great ball players coming. So look forward to doing a lot more with this guy. Me and Chris and Nick, New York, LA, whatever you want to call us.
And the computer is still on this time.
Computer's on. It'll work. So we'll catch you soon, all right, buddy?
And
I'm
no
out.
Dogs, no
That's
dogs,
no,
no
dogs.
Bells ringing. Chris ain't hitting on the
That's
table.
It. There we go. All right, we'll see you later. Ciao.
Later.
MLB.tv Premium, the number one live streaming sports service, is celebrating 13 years. Watch every out-of-market regular season game live or on demand in true HD. Real-time highlights, live look-ins, pitch tracking widget, and more. MLB.tv Premium includes a free At-Bat 15 subscription. Watch live baseball on over 400 mobile and connected devices. Watch at home, in the office, or on the go. Every night, on every device. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Visit MLB.tv for details.